From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're checking back on one of the biggest stories we've done. It spans three continents, but starts right here at home. Maybe you've seen these Planet Aid clothing donation boxes in shopping center parking lots. They are in more than 20 states right now, usually big, bright yellow bins, and right on the front are the words Planet Aid. They don't give away the clothes. Planet Aid sells them and claims to use the money for aid projects around the world. We've investigated concerns about how Planet Aid operates. We found a 2001 FBI report that linked Planet Aid to a Danish money laundering organization. The organization goes by different names. Some call it Twinned, some call it the Teachers Group. Former members, historians, the press, you'll often hear them refer to it as a mind-controlling cult. And it's not just used clothing we're talking about. The U.S. government also awarded grants to Planet Aid totaling more than $130 million. So if you're paying taxes, you're contributing through these grant programs run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Under the headline Food for Progress, USDA has partnered with Planet Aid to create rural development and economic growth, benefiting more than 500,000 people in Malawi.
Since 2004, the U.S. government has spent that money on USAID projects in Mozambique and Malawi.
One of the reasons that Planet Aid was chosen is based on, as they say in Hollywood, the body of work.
That's Charles Rush. He works for the USDA. In this promotional video from 2010, he says he's pleased with Planet Aid's work. Malawi is generally considered the poorest country in the world. People don't turn food away here. It's not uncommon for rural Malawians to eat just one meal a day. Planet Aid claims a lot of the U.S. funds went to feed hungry Malawians through their Farmers Club projects.
Since the inception of the USDA Farmers Clubs in Malawi, remarkable outcomes have been achieved. 240 Farmers Clubs have been established with 12,000 members. 8,000 farmers are now growing more than four different types of crops.
But after our reporters Amy Walters and Matt Smith started digging into those claims, we had a lot of questions. Now, just to be clear, Planet Aid also runs schools and an AIDS prevention program. But we focused on the farmers' clubs. We sent Matt and Amy to Malawi to find out what was really going on.
We arrived at the village with a woman who is working on these projects. This crowd of women from the village, they came out of nowhere. These beautiful, colorful Malawian clothes, singing. I'd never been welcomed like that.
That's Amy. And this is just one stop on a tour that she and Matt were taking of villages up and down Malawi.
They took us to the center of the village. The houses were mud bricks. There was a clearing under some trees, and men were there in pressed shirts like it was a special occasion. They were folding chairs in a line for the chief and a few village officials. Other men, they stood to the side. On the other side, women sat on the ground. So did a dozen or so children.
They visited four farmers' club sites and talked to regional managers.
Malawi has two main cities, Blantyre in the south and the capital, Lilongwe, in the center of the country. But you get 20 minutes outside either town and you barely see anything that wasn't taken straight out of the red soil. There's no asphalt on the red dust roads. Everyone here is a farmer, growing food to feed their families.
Yeah, this is my home area.
Jackson Netemboka used to run a lot of Planet Aid's Farmers Club projects here. He agreed to take us around, and he told us the projects weren't what they seemed. And the first sign was that big welcome we got. Jackson says when villagers come out singing and dancing, a lot of the time, it's a show for foreigners. English isn't his first language, so you have to listen carefully. What he has to say is important. People in Malawi are starving.
Maybe they eat maybe once a day. If kids are not getting a balanced diet, then the health cannot be good for them. Stunted growth, and also sometimes so many illnesses.
Jackson took the job with Planet Aid so he could help his people. He was actually in another Planet Aid promotional video.
Then those clubs, we are training the leadership, then we'll be working hand in hand in agriculture.
Now he seems less inclined to promote his former employer.
That's good.
What's the name of the area?
This is Njuri. Yeah, Njuri.
Okay. Jackson's from Njuli, here in the heart of the Chiradzulu district in southern Malawi. Starting in 2006, Planet Aid promised the U.S. government it would transform farmers' lives here. Malawians would grow more food to eat and to sell. Planet Aid claimed the harvest doubled in just 3 years. That's not what Jackson saw.
It was like there were just a few plants, and some maybe they were dry, and some maybe they were not there because they are not given adequate inputs like seeds and fertilizer.
What Jackson's telling us is the farmers didn't get enough seeds or fertilizer, so the crops never took off. One Planet Aid demonstration garden we saw was filled with piles of bricks, drying in the sun.
Along with the vegetables, Planet Aid promised pigs and goats to breed as livestock. Jenica Mwendo is a farmer nearby. He says they did get one pig and one goat.
Is the pig still alive?
No.
Is the goat still alive?
No.
So no animals?
Now, we don't have any pig and goat in our homes because of that donation.
In several other villages we visited, we learned the animals were also weak and died before they could breed.
Planet Aid promised water pumps, too, so farmers were no longer dependent on the seasonal rains to grow food. But in the village of Njuli, they only gave away one pump. They were actually selling the rest. Out of 300 families, only the village chief bought one.
When we met him, that pump was in tatters.
This pipe that's supporting the rope pump, you could tell it's several different pieces he's tying together with what used to be a black plastic garbage bag.
Witness Chibwana is the chief's name. He took out a loan to buy the $100 pump. That money could have paid for a year of school for one of his children. It took him 2 years to pay it off.
Remember, U.S. taxpayers poured millions of dollars into these projects, but wherever we went, it didn't look like all that money hit the ground. There was one farmer, the farmer who was given the pump for free. His life improved some, but because he was sharing the water with the whole village, even that sometimes ran out. The rest of the farmers we spoke with said their lives hadn't changed a bit, not from anything the farmers' clubs had done.
Jackson told us Planet Aid was cheating the people of Malawi.
It was cheating. It was not the reality. It was cheating.
And what did you think the reality was?
Yeah, the reality, it was the farmers were not benefiting from farmers' crop. That is the reality.
Jackson says cheating, it was part of his job.
Whenever donors like the USDA, would come to check on the Planet Aid projects, Jackson was charged with sprucing them up. Around the edges of the farms, he replaced dying plants with sturdy, healthy ones, all for show.
So we are transferring some of the plants into watering them to make sure that the following day, when the officials come, things they are okay.
Jackson was also told to track down successful farmers, farmers who weren't part of Farmers Club at all. He showed us one of these special heather gray T-shirts he would have them wear.
We say Farmers Club behind, then in the front, it's a Planet Aid in a USDA-funded program.
A U.S. taxpayer-funded program. Jackson used the USDA T-shirts to convince donors the project was a success.
And the village chief was roped in, too. Remember that Planet Aid video promoting the USDA project? Chief Witness Chibwana also played a part. We showed the chief the video where he's saying, I grew tomatoes and raised $1,000. He says that wasn't true. He grew the tomatoes on his own before this farmers club even showed up. And he made the money on his own too. Not even his name is right. The video identifies the chief as Mfunu Mbwana. But it's really Witness Chibwana. Now, he says the video is painful to watch. He's sorry for all the things he said before, because they weren't true.
And Jackson Netimboka says he's sorry, too, because Jackson knew where the money was going all along.
We can say teachers group benefited themselves. They benefited from this, not the people.
Jackson told us the U.S. government money, or at least some of it, was going to the teachers group. And Jackson told us he was once a member of the teachers group himself.
So what is this teachers group? In Denmark, everyone knows about them. Articles have been popping up in the Danish press for decades, unveiling scandals and accusations. In 2002, the teachers group was put on trial for embezzlement. Two high-ranking members were found guilty as charged. But the leader, a former schoolteacher named Mogens M.D. Petersen, was never convicted. He's still charged with those crimes, and today he's a fugitive from the law. The teachers group runs dozens of organizations all around the world. One of them is Planet Aid. The group got started in Denmark, so that's where Matt and Amy pick up the trail.
We just left Copenhagen this morning and we're heading west now.
Matt and I landed in Copenhagen, the capital. After close to a day of driving halfway across the country, we finally found ourselves in Odense, the town where Hans Christian Andersen was born. So this is the house.
It's a pretty nice house for a commune.
The house we're standing in front of, it's a stately white house with a black tile roof, at least two stories tall, hard to tell exactly, though, without going in. Behind a well-tended hedge, a BMW is parked in the gravel U-shaped driveway. To many Danes, this is known as the first commune in Denmark. It's where M.D. Petersen got his start.
He was a very impressive person.
Carsten Ringsmos lived there, too. He was one of M.D.'s comrades back then.
People. They listened very much to him.
M.D. could command attention like no one he'd ever seen. Carsten says he still does.
Inside the teachers group, people who are stupid enough to believe it, look at him as a great person. Compare him with Chairman Mao or Nelson Mandela in South Africa.
But Carsten's feelings have changed. This is how he describes his old friend now.
One of the worst criminals in this total world.
As we mentioned earlier, Amdi is an international fugitive now. He's refused to return to Denmark to face charges of embezzlement and tax evasion. And you'll find his mugshot if you pull up Interpol's website today. One of the most wanted criminals in the world.
But back in the commune days, things were more innocent. In fact, Amdi and his comrades were famous in Denmark's peace movement. And everything was about sharing. Everything was about the group. Eva Sorensen, another former comrade, explained how the system worked. They would set up this yellow bucket, and people in the commune would toss their money into it, whatever they could.
If they earned wages, then they put them there, and then you were part of it. If you got your money and kept them, then you weren't part of it. You could still work for them or be with them, but you wouldn't be part of it.
And people wanted to be part of it. This is where the Carefree Collective took a big step toward the global network of financial fraud it was about to become.
For Amdi, this economic revolution needed to grow around the world. Walter Hansen was Amdi's best friend back then.
The idea is precisely to send young people out into the third world to see the poverty, to see the misery, to awaken their revolutionary spirit because of all the injustice, and then come home and be a revolutionary.
Revolutionary as a violent overthrow of established governments?
Yes, of course.
And Walter says they realized they could get money for this revolution from the Danish state.
There's a very, very liberal school law in Denmark. Anybody can make a private school, and you get 85% paid by the state. They saw how much money you could get out of the state if you turned the coin the right way.
So with that money from the Danish government, Amdi started the twin schools.
The first were called traveling folk high schools. Young followers were sent off to Nepal, India, the Middle East, and Africa on old buses. It was a young hippie's dream.
This is a video from a bus trip in 1970. That's Amdi, appearing in a 1970 Danish documentary produced by Jens Nantofte. His message: if we really want to learn something, then we must venture out into reality. He's sitting on these bus steps in what looks like the middle of a desert. The video has this mystical feel, and you can really see Amdi's appeal. He's lanky, 6'6", with dark blonde hair and an intense presence.
Britta Junge was happy to climb on board the traveling folk high school. It was 1977. She was a Danish hippie with a desire to do good and see the world.
I had just completed my college, and it was famous that time to go out and travel to somewhere remote in the world. So I went to an introduction meeting, and I immediately decided that I wanted to join the traveling folk high school.
At the time, Britta said it was inspiring, and she got her adventure. A bus trip to India, she says she never would have taken on her own.
The travel home from India was incredibly hard. We traveled through Baluchistan, the southern Pakistan, which was a desert, bumping like this for days, angry and confused inside and lonely, and there was nothing you could do. You were in the middle of the desert. And our bus broke down. The more exhausted we were, the more our vulnerability was shown.
Britta was just beginning her journey. The teachers' group was in charge, with Amdi Peterson at the wheel.
But it wasn't until 1980 that she joined the teachers' group herself. That's when she met Amdi Peterson for the first time.
I remember there were no windows at all in the room where we met him. And he was wearing white gloves. And then there was a very special atmosphere. And I think we all thought it was quite a great moment.
By joining the teachers group, Britta handed over the dwindling independence she had left. Amdi's idea of tossing money into the yellow bucket had evolved. Now there were three principles Britta and every teachers group member had to sign on to.
The first is called common time. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, each member's time belongs to the group.
The next, common economy, the salary, the income of the members, also belongs to the group. It works off an assumption the group will provide in return.
And finally, what's called common distribution. The teachers group can call members away at any moment and send them anywhere in the world. Britta was sent to the southern part of Africa, Zimbabwe, Angola, Mozambique. She thought she was working against apartheid and making the world a better place.
I was responsible for finances, budgets and reporting and things like that.
One of her jobs was applying for grants for a teachers group organization called Development Aid People to People, or DAP. Britta was told to look out for grants with big salaries, Western salaries. The money was very important.
But here's the thing. Britta said she never got paid that salary. The common economy meant no one in the teachers group received a salary, according to Britta.
I was member of the teacher group. And everybody knows that when, if you are a member of a teacher group, then you have also agreed to common economy. I have worked 10 years in Zimbabwe or in Africa without receiving a salary.
So dozens of people are pretending to receive salaries, and that money is going out of the country.
Yes.
Britta says the grant money that was supposed to fund the salaries in Africa was going to the teachers group at the direction of Amdi Peterson himself.
This plan, that is definitely from the level of Amdi, to generate more income to the teacher group. That is why it was important.
And those salaries were only one stream of money.
In the early 90s, the teachers group expanded into the used clothing bin business. Used clothes were collected in Denmark, then sold in Africa. The money would pay for a project, a school, or a hospital. They were sometimes real projects, but DAP was also soliciting grants for the same projects.
You will definitely see bricks and projects established, but you will not know how much funds have come via the used clothing system. As an insider, I know that the clothing is sold and you use the money to fulfill the aim of the project.
It was a shell game. Projects were funded twice, from grants and from the clothing sales. So the leftover money, Britta says it was scuttled out of the country.
With planes, we hired local planes to transport the local currency every week.
You rented airplanes to carry cash?
Yes.
And then Britta realized what was going on. With the grants and clothing sales, money was pouring in, but it wasn't going to the Africans. Britta realized more money was going back to Denmark than they were bringing in. She was carrying it herself, bags of it.
So when it coincided with my going to Denmark, which I did every 3 months, or there would be another person going as well, then we could carry the money in a bag on our stomach. Three bags of money, local currency money.
The money was going to the teachers' group, and that's what the Danish court documents say too. Money meant for charity projects in Africa was instead transferred to teachers' group accounts, some of it reserved for Amdi Petersen's, quote, free disposal.
The money, the fraud, the lack of freedom, it was weighing on Britta, and in 1995, it became too much. Britta left Angola, she left the teachers' group. But by then, there were new recruits.
Africans or local Africans, they were actually invited to join the teacher group.
And a new source of income.
The aim of having Africans in the teacher group is also to have more heads to earn money, to earn salaries for the teacher group.
We told Britta what we'd found, that the U.S. government spent more than $130 million on Planet Aid projects in Africa.
Planet Aid, a teachers group organization.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Planet Aid money would be used in the same system.
But long before Britta left the teachers' group, speculation about Amdi was already brewing in the Danish press. In 1977, the same year Britta met him, Amdi went into hiding. And in 1998, a former headmaster wrote to Denmark's Ministry of Education and called the group a dangerous cult, accusing Amdi of practicing psychological terror and cutting members off from family members and friends. In 2001, Danish police filed a warrant for Amdi Petersen's arrest. Amdi's passport was flagged flying through Los Angeles. He was arrested and after 6 months flew to Denmark for trial. Along with seven high-ranking teachers group members, Amdi was charged with tax fraud and embezzling the equivalent of almost $9 million. It was one of the biggest high-profile trials Denmark has ever seen. In the years that followed, two teachers group members were convicted, but at the end of the first trial, Amdi Petersen was cleared. He fled Denmark immediately after the ruling, and as it turns out, never returned. New charges were filed against him just days later, but by then, Amdi was gone. Knud Hargard was the lead investigator on the Danish trial, and he says what Twin did in Denmark is exactly what it's doing in the USA.
I think it was the same who happened here in Denmark. Much, much more. It's much more money we would talk about in USA.
And the thing is, the USDA knew. They knew about the Danish case. They knew about the teachers group. They also knew about the ties between the teachers group and Planet Aid. But the agency continued giving Planet Aid grants worth tens of millions of dollars, intended for projects in Malawi and Mozambique. When we come back, Matt and Amy take us back to Malawi for a closer look at the people who worked on those projects.
It's like a slavery, working very hard and getting rich. We were forced. It was not voluntary.
That's coming up next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
This is Jennifer LaFleur. I'm a senior editor at Reveal, and we just finished a new project about the legacy of America's atomic veterans. There are hundreds of thousands of atomic vets who participated in the U.S. nuclear weapons test program. Some were on ships in the Pacific. Others stood in trenches at a test site in Nevada. Another group of atomic veterans includes those who went into Hiroshima and Nagasaki after the bombings there. I started interviewing these veterans a few years ago after I heard my father talk about his experiences in the largest U.S. base test. Some vets told me they could see the bones in their hands during the blast. Some have had health problems they think could have been caused by the tests. but there's no medal for atomic vets, and many have struggled to get compensation from the VA. You can read our story on our website and watch a documentary we produce with the Retro Report. Just head to revealnews.org/atomicvets.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today on Reveal, we're following a story that originally aired in March. It's about how more than $130 million of U.S. taxpayer money was spent on an NGO called Planet Aid. That money was meant to help with food, healthcare, and education in Malawi and Mozambique. But Reveal reporters Matt Smith and Amy Walters found a hidden link. It turns out Planet Aid was born out of a teachers group whose members were convicted of embezzlement and tax fraud in Denmark over a decade ago. Denmark is where the group began. Today, their leader, Mogens Amdi Petersen, is still on the run. And the lead investigator in that Danish case warns that the teachers group may be following the same playbook, but this time with Planet Aid projects. So Matt and Amy take us back to Malawi for a closer look at where those U.S. dollars are going.
We met up with Marco Zabaya at his home about an hour outside of Lilongwe, Malawi's capital. His house is walled off from the main street. Actually, it's more like a wide dirt road. Children are everywhere. Marco used to manage Planet Aid's Farmers Club projects, intended to make local farmers more self-sufficient. Planet Aid's projects were run by another teachers group organization called Development Aid People to People, or DAP, Malawi. Marco worked for DAP. The teachers group is a maze of organizations, and it's complicated on purpose. Looking through court documents, a 1995 memo from Amdi Petersen reveals his plan to, quote, lay down a twisted access path with only ourselves as compass holders.
I will show you those documents, how we were paying contribution through National Bank.
Marco is showing us piles of documents. They're bank deposit slips that he saved. He would collect a portion of his co-workers' salaries as part of the teachers group common economy. The money went back to the teachers group.
What is this?
This is the account for one of the teachers group members. These are the contributions.
On the back of the slips, Marco wrote down the names of each person he'd take money from and how much he took. It went straight to the personal bank accounts of teacher group leaders.
Ibn Petersen and Ore Thompson, they are the account holder on behalf of our teachers group in Malawi.
So they get to buy cars and pizza with this money, or what?
We don't know what they can use because we are depositing the money in their accounts. Ore Thompson is the husband to Lisbeth Thompson.
You may have trouble understanding Marco's accent. He said that the money he was collecting went into the personal bank accounts of two teachers group bosses, Ibn Petersen and Ule Thompson. And Ule is the husband of Lisbeth Thompson. She's pretty high up in the teachers group. She's the country director of DAP Malawi, which runs the USDA projects for Planet Aid in that country.
While researching the story, we spoke to about a dozen African members of the teachers group. All of them gave a portion of their salary to the group, from 20% to 100%. Everything they earned. Marco was no exception. He joined the teachers group in 2006 and made contributions too.
I'm paying the Danish money, using my money, my salary money, for contribution every month.
Marco said he was pressured to sign a contract promising he would never get the money back. We got a copy of one from another teachers group member. People who sign it also agree to the same principles Amdi Petersen dreamed up back in Denmark in 1970. Their time, money, freedom, none of that is their own. They sign their lives over to the teachers group.
When I came home, I was still thinking, how can Danish people forcing us Africans to sign? Even those Danish, they get a lot of money, but as we are getting little, then we are forced to pay contribution. I was so sad because I was forced to sign for it. I wanted to secure my job.
As a member of the teachers group, Marco had to submit a budget showing how he spent his personal money every week. Remember, his money no longer belonged to him. the final straw?
This is my wife, my son, Kilali.
Marco was told his family, his wife, his son, and his two daughters were an extraneous expense. He was barred from supporting them. So after 15 years, without any other prospects, he quit. He left the teachers group.
And there are hundreds of teachers group members all over Malawi.
Those money which they took from our salaries went straight to the teachers group.
That's the voice of another Malawian, a USDA Farmers Club manager. She still works for DAP Malawi and is still a member of the teachers group. To protect her job, we agreed not to use her name. She claims the teachers group was also docking their pay.
They gave the organization $350. But what I'm getting from DAP is $100.
That's something Marco confirmed. Donor-funded salaries weren't paid in full. One amount was written into the budget, but people were paid much less.
It was written $350, but she's getting $100 per month. In her salary, it is a tricky way of doing it.
It's like a slavery.
Slavery, she says.
For me, I think it's the same. Because you are forcing to do something which you don't want. So slavery was also the same thing. People were forced to do something which they don't want. Working very hard and getting little. We were forced. It was not like voluntary.
These employees became a cash cow for the teachers group.
And they were taking money from projects, too.
We got a hold of several DAP Malawi invoices and financial spreadsheets from 2013 and 2014. These weren't the kind of documents with line items for farm equipment or livestock. Instead, there were these large numbers, unidentified transfers, as big as $400,000, moving from DAP Malawi's account to the teachers group's African headquarters in Zimbabwe. Matt and I showed the paperwork to DAP Malawi's former controller, Harrison Longway.
These are all different sort of bills and invoices and stuff to Zimbabwe. We're getting to one quarter being almost $400,000. And we go to another quarter, and we have close to $400,000. And we go to another quarter. Well, anyway, quarter after quarter, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, getting to be millions of dollars. What's going on here?
To me, it's what I would call systematic fraud.
Harrison is one of several insiders who told us at least half of the U.S. government grant money was being siphoned away, one transaction at a time. And most of it was headed to the teachers group African headquarters in Zimbabwe. Harrison said he found it difficult to get a straight answer from anyone about why, because the group was a cult with an oath of secrecy. Documents and interviews with current and former employees indicate the money was sent on to other accounts and entities around the world, all controlled by the teachers group. Malawi is a country of 16 million people, with a gross domestic product of $4.2 billion. Economically, that's like a small city in the U.S. If tens of millions of dollars from the USDA had been dropped into that small pool, you would have seen ripples.
The impact that was supposed to be heard in Malawi as a nation was supposed to be huge. That's why I'm putting it around 70%.
We wanted another opinion, so we went to Stephen Casella. He retired in 2015 as chief of the money laundering section of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland. We showed him the financial data from inside DAP Malawi. He said the evidence we collected is the kind of thing that draws the interest of federal fraud investigators.
It's certainly smoke, and it's certainly a launching pad. It's something that an investigator would look at. Why are these tens of millions of dollars in government funds going to an umbrella organization that seems to be dispersing it all over the world to entities that are related? The next step you would take would be, well, what are they getting in return? Are these services actually being performed?
DAP Malawi's country director, Lisbeth Thompson, approved those unusual transfers, according to her staff. Amy and I caught up with her at an AIDS conference in Lilongwe, Malawi's capital. Neither of us had met her before. She seemed a little anxious, smiling, but nervous.
Hi. Elizabeth Thompson. I'm Amy Walters.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Matt Smith, we're with Reveal Radio in the United States. It's a public radio show.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a second to talk about DAP Malawi and what you're doing in this country?
Let me just stop here for a second and explain what exactly is going on. We've reached out to Planet Aid representatives in the United States over a dozen times, hoping to interview someone there. That hasn't happened. Their PR firm repeatedly told us no one from Planet Aid was going to speak to us and hinted at legal action. We've telephoned attorneys and individuals close to Amdi Peterson, who's running the teachers group. They either acted like they didn't know what we were talking about or just didn't call back. So before we left Malawi, we wanted to talk to someone who could explain what was happening to this U.S. money, meant to make life better for Malawian farmers. It wasn't clear if Elizabeth Thompson knew who we were, but it was rather clear she didn't want to talk.
But anyway, I think it's not the appropriate time.
So we've been working on this, looking at your organization for almost a year.
Okay.
We've talked to at least a dozen people inside your organization. And what they say individually, one by one, as we've interviewed them, is that your organization is skimming U.S. government funds.
Sure.
Your own people, the people in charge of your money, said that you're stealing money.
Yeah, okay, but that cannot be true. I'm definitely not stealing any money.
What happened to the money?
Definitely. A lot of good programs. That's what I can assure you.
What are the good programs?
Both Farmers Club, education, health, everything.
And it has been really good. We've gone to Farmers Clubs all over Malawi.
Mm-hmm.
They say their life changed not at all from when you arrived and from when you left.
But then I think you've talked to the wrong people. I'm sure.
But Harrison, DAP's former financial controller, was one of the people who said he also saw fraud.
Why would your own controller say the money was stolen? And now he says the money was stolen.
But that I also don't believe he has said, honestly. Okay.
I told her what we'd seen. That we'd visited farmers' clubs, and in every instance, the farmers themselves told us that was a lie. Again, Elizabeth Thompson disagreed.
If that's what you want to portray, okay. I have been there as well. I know what has happened, okay. So, exactly that the programs which we were to implement has been implemented. A very, very good outcome. Farmers has been assisted in becoming food secure, and that I can assure you.
And when we asked her whether she knew Amdi Peterson, she refused to answer any more questions.
We're interested particularly
right now because I'm just going for lunch.
Elizabeth Thompson would not acknowledge any wrongdoing by her organization and insisted the USDA money was going exactly where it was supposed to go, the people of Malawi. So who's making sure that the U.S. government money is being properly spent? The answer to that question had us ping-ponging around the world, from U.S. offices in Malawi to Kenya and back to the U.S. We wrap things up when we come back. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
This is Nathan Helverson from Reveal. Last year on our show, I discovered how companies from the Middle East are pumping up dwindling water supplies in the Arizona desert and exporting it back to Saudi Arabia in the form of hay. Since then, seven graduate students at Arizona State University have picked up the trail. They produced a new documentary about the business of exporting water from the arid Southwest and the angry reaction of locals who are seeing their water disappear overseas. You can watch the video and hear my original story on our website. Just go to revealnews.org.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today, our reporters Matt Smith and Amy Walters are revisiting the story of a U.S. foreign aid project gone wrong. It starts with a Massachusetts-based NGO called Planet Aid. They're an offshoot of the Teachers Group, a reputed cult that started on a Danish commune in the 1970s. In the last decade, two high-ranking Teachers Group members were convicted of embezzlement and tax evasion in a Danish trial. The leader, Mogens Amdi Peterson, is still wanted by law. And it was during that trial in 2004 that the USDA started sending multi-million dollar grants to Planet Aid. Now the total tops $130 million, and the U.S. government is continuing to spend more money today. When Matt and Amy went to Malawi to check on a handful of Planet Aid projects, they met with dissatisfied farmers, unhappy project managers, and saw evidence of mismanaged money and potential fraud. But worse than that, The Malawians that the U.S. money was supposed to help say that they were forced to hand over parts of their salaries to the teachers group. One woman compared it to slavery. So how did the U.S. government let all this happen? I'll leave that to our reporters, Matt and Amy.
Just geographically speaking, you can understand why it might be difficult for the U.S. government to check up on projects they funded in Malawi. Washington, D.C., it's about a third of the way around the globe. But U.S. officials do have this advantage. When we were trying to find DAP Malawi's offices in the capital, we ended up at a U.S. embassy building instead. They're neighbors. DAP and the U.S. government, they share a wall. We called Edward Monster. That's the name of the press spokesman at the U.S. Embassy in Malawi. We wanted to know why the USDA kept spending money on an organization with a history of fraud and whether they checked to make sure the projects were happening.
Basically, we don't have anyone here at the U.S. Embassy in Malawi that works on the USDA programs. That's all.
We needed to contact USDA offices in Nairobi, Kenya, over 1,000 miles away.
The USDA office based in Nairobi has regional responsibilities and covers any USDA activities or funded projects here in Malawi. So that's all handled completely out of Nairobi.
Right. Okay.
By Kate's office, Kate's staff. So I wish I could help you, Amy, but
sure.
I don't have anyone here.
So Amy and I called Kate Snipes in Nairobi.
Oh, I totally got it. I just that we're here in Malawi. So I just wanted to double check that there was no one here for us to talk to at all in the entire country of Malawi.
That is correct. We have no USDA staff in Malawi. None.
So how do you find out if the money's being spent properly?
We have very extensive monitoring and evaluation staff in headquarters that actually came out multiple times from Washington and did those reviews.
How many times?
They don't come from our staff here because I'm not trained in monitoring and evaluation and contracting. But
Kate never told us how many times the USDA representatives visited Planet Aid sites since the grant started in 2004. She just said they visited. But it didn't sound like they saw the same things we did. Abandoned fields, betrayed farmers, and staff with real suspicions about what happened with that money.
But Kate says she did visit Malawi once.
I personally was out there just to visit one site near a school to open up a school.
The Dawa school.
That was 2012. Photos show her at a ribbon-cutting ceremony alongside Planet Aid's top liaison to the USDA.
Everything that I saw and all of our monitoring, I know I got feedback, it was on the up and up. Again, I'm supposed to route you to my public affairs office, and I recommend you contact Sally Kluzaris.
Just to review, we started looking for answers with the U.S. Embassy offices in Malawi. Then we were routed to Nairobi, Kenya, over 1,000 miles away. Now we're being sent to Washington, D.C. So we called Sally.
Good afternoon, Public Affairs.
Hi, I am calling for Sally Kluzaris. Is she available?
She's at a meeting right now.
Okay, this is Amy Walters with Reveal. Do you know when Sally Kluzaris will be out of her meeting?
No, I don't. Actually, she just went in, so it could be an hour or it could be more or less.
I left several messages, but Sally, the then head of public affairs for the USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service, she never called back. We did receive an email, though, and in it, Sally confirmed what Kate said. They don't have any USDA staff on the ground in Malawi. Sally had a completely different story about who was in charge of monitoring. She wrote that Planet Aid projects were in fact monitored out of Nairobi by Kate.
At this point, it felt like we were getting the runaround. No one was taking responsibility. We weren't the first people to start asking the USDA about Planet Aid.
In 2006, there was an internal memo with the subject Troubling News. We put in a Freedom of Information Act request and found the email alerting the USDA to the ties between the teachers group and Planet Aid.
The USDA looked into it. They sent an inquiry to the U.S. Embassy in Denmark and asked their Office of Inspector General to open an investigation. but the Inspector General's office declined, saying they needed more evidence of criminal activity, despite everything we know about Amdi Peterson's criminal record. Over the years, there were several red flags from the press, regular citizens, and reputable NGOs, Save the Children, UNICEF. We also spoke to Knut Hargard. He was the lead investigator in the Danish case. He told us all the USDA needed to do was call. He had some things he wanted to tell the Americans.
And I think U.S. authorities could write to the Danish police. It would be possible for them to see what we have in our evidence, that we could get a copy of our case.
He never heard from the USDA or any U.S. officials.
Matt and Amy join me in the studio now to wrap things up. So that money from USDA grants, over $130 million, up to 70%, was allegedly taken from the projects it was meant for and stripped from employees' salaries. At least some of that money went to the teachers' group, but for what?
Well, we don't know about all of it, but we do know Amdi Peterson doesn't shy away from spending money. He had condos worth $10 million in Miami. There was a teachers' group yacht. Properties around the world. And don't forget about the dog.
That's right. Amdi was sort of collecting dogs. He had two in Miami, one for each condo. But before that, there were actually three, all of them named Boris. When he was living in Zimbabwe, one of them actually got lost. And so what he did was hire the second best animal tracker in the whole country. Also a helicopter, a platoon of cars, bikes, people, all to find the dog. And after 2 years, nothing. They never found him.
What about Amdi Peterson? I mean, where do people think he is now?
Mexico. The people we talked to who saw Amdi in the past couple of years, they're mostly African teachers group members. The folks we talked to in Malawi, plus Zimbabwe, Mozambique. The teachers group flies them to Mexico, Las Pulgas. It's less than 100 miles south of the border in beautiful Baja California.
And that's not that far.
No. We've seen aerial photos of this compound. It's massive. Marble floors. We've seen shipping manifests for fine crystal. We have documents showing the teachers group itself appraised the complex at more than $20 million. And Jackson, the employee working on the Planet Aid Farmers Project in Malawi, he was told by his teachers group bosses the money from the USDA was going straight to Mexico.
So did you ever talk to Planet Aid?
We tried. Remember, we talked to that woman heading up their projects in Malawi. She insisted they were not stealing money. And the PR firm Planet Aid hired emailed us a response. It said in part, Planet Aid has a long and successful track record managing U.S. government projects in Africa.
And what about the USDA? They didn't really see anything wrong?
You know, it's interesting because before we left for Malawi, I talked to Ron Krushorn, and he was the guy who worked on the Planet Aid grants to the USDA. He told us that he'd received the FBI files that linked Planet Aid to the teachers group, but his quote was, "We didn't have anything that precluded a grant with that organization." That was what he said.
And when we got back from Malawi, we tried again. We went to the office in Washington, D.C. and asked for their public information officer. Her name's Sally Klusaritz. Here's what happened.
We were going to try to call up to Sally Klusaritz.
She's not available.
She's not available today, or what do they recommend we do?
They're refusing to see you, so there's nothing else can be done. So therefore, you're going to have to go out with that microphone. You can't come here with that microphone. You have to go out.
We never got past the front desk. The guards tossed us out.
It turns out Sally Klusaritz retired, and Ron Krushorn doesn't work on this project anymore, but he's still with the USDA.
That was Reveal's Matt Smith and Amy Walters. Before our story ran, the USDA told us that none of their reviews of Planet Aid projects yielded concerns, but we've recently learned that they are now considering an investigation into Planet Aid. Congresswoman Betty McCollum is also calling on the USDA to account for the money that went to Planet Aid. We have a lot more on this investigation at revealnews.org/teachersgroup. One of our stories is about a connection between the Clinton Global Initiative and a member of the teachers group, the lead fundraiser for Planet Aid. Here's a sneak peek.
Every year in September, the Clinton Global Initiative holds its annual meeting in Midtown Manhattan.
Please welcome Vice Chair of the Clinton Foundation, Chelsea Clinton.
Madeleine Albright, the President of Liberia, Mario Batali, Ted Danson, they're all there. But we were there to see someone a little less well-known.
Hi, Marie.
A Danish woman, Marie Lichtenberg.
We have some questions about Planet Aid that we'd like to ask you.
Oh.
Hi.
You could contact our press.
When we approached her, trying to ask about her charity work in Malawi.
She doesn't want to answer.
We're doing an hour-long radio show,
ma'am,
Marie.
Ma'am, please go back.
She didn't seem interested in chatting.
Like a lot of Clinton Global Initiative members, Marie leverages membership to help raise funds for her organization. In this case, Planet Aid.
Persistent, I think, is the best descriptor for Marie. 100%.
To learn about the connections between Planet Aid and the Clinton Global Initiative, plus a lot more, go to our website, revealnews.org/teachersgroup. On the next Reveal, Sheriff Dave Daniel is one man fighting a losing battle.
Imagine living in an area that you call 911 and no one comes.
We go on patrol with a sheriff whose department is stretched to the breaking point, and fixing things would mean raising taxes.
People pretty much support law enforcement. They just aren't ready to pay for the law enforcement.
Stories from lawless lands, coming your way next week. Amy Walters and Matt Smith reported and produced this week's show, with editing from our executive director, Robert Rosenthal, and editor-in-chief, Amy Powell. Julia B. Chan and David Richard provided additional production help. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Note Mullen. Our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.